Hey everybody, welcome to another weekly REI Vault team huddle call. Today's Tuesday, April 21st, 2015. Welcome to the call. Excited to have you. Opportunity to answer questions, speak freely, use it as an opportunity to share, learn, ask questions. We really don't limit the type of question. If it's about a real estate deal, then fantastic. If you have questions around Podio or leads or whatever it might be, you know, use it as an opportunity to ask freely, and Chris and I will do our best to give you our own personal insight and recommendations. We keep the call just because of the background noise. We get to keep everybody muted. At some point, we may unmute the line and put people on the spot. But if you want to ask a question, just press on your phone, press star five, and that will put your hand up so Chris and I can see that you have a question. We'll bring you on. We ask that you just ask the question first and then maybe some of the backstory afterwards, as opposed to so we can just make this as efficient as possible. And if you have questions during the week, you can always email support@salesteamlive.com. If it's technical in nature, anything related to your marketing, the VAs, a request, kind of a change request or a question, just email support@salesteamlive.com. If it's specific to a deal, email dealhelp@reivault.com. If it's specific to a deal, please email it to dealhelp@reivault.com. And copy the URL of the lead in Podio, that's the website address of that specific lead. And in the question that you put into that email, be as specific as possible. It allows us to be as efficient. We can do the research and have a good dialogue with you. We do ask for 24 hours of notice if you're ever asking for a change request or question for us to get back to you. We try to be a lot faster than that. We say 24 hours. We're trying to be at 24 minutes. That is our goal. So welcome to the call. A couple of things I just wanted to share before we get started. And you can ask if you have a question, go ahead and press star 5 at any time, and we'll at least start seeing the questions so that we can make this as efficient as possible. Just the next couple of minutes, Chris and I will just go through some updates. If anything's pressing, I'll share one thing we're working on right now. Over the next couple, probably the next 30 days, we are changing some of our support processes. We're noticing a lot of repetitive questions that people ask, and we're identifying all of those that come in and building frequently asked questions and more training and documentation just to make this more efficient. We just noticed a lot of people have questions around, you know, how do I add somebody to my Podio? You know, you want to add somebody else on your team to Podio. And we're going to make it a lot more efficient with questions, frequently asked questions, and then change requests, because we notice that there's a lot of back and forth. There's a lot of moving parts in what we do for all of you. People are asking to increase their budget, to decrease their budget, to put their mail on hold, to add zip codes, to track zip codes, et cetera. And so we're going to be changing that process a little bit. I'm sure all of you will appreciate it because it'll make it a lot more efficient. Let's see. Second thing I will share, Chris and I are working on all the things that we want to add to the REI Vault program for all of us. And so next week, Chris and I are actually going out to Dallas. There will not be a call next week. We will not have next Tuesday, April 28th. We will not have a weekly call. We're going to be flying out to Dallas, and we're going to have about maybe 12 of us in the REI Vault group that are coming together for a mastermind on Thursday of next week to work together to also help one another on some of our big stacks. Our top two or three big stuff that if we could have solved amongst the 12 of us, would be game changer. So that's part of it. And then also working together to identify all the additional things we want to add to the REI Vault program. We've asked a lot of you to send emails to suggestionbox@reivault.com with your recommendations and what else would be really helpful. We've been compiling that list, and we're working on what our 3 to 6 month plan is going to look like for other stuff that we roll out. We've had people that have asked about skip tracing, how it would be very, very beneficial to automate the skip tracing process rather than everybody having to go and sign up for PLO or Acuren or what have you to be able to skip trace and track down some of these vacant homes, how it would be really good if we could centralize that function and be able to do that for all of us. We've had people that have been recommending that we get a lot more specialty lists where we can mail to probate, to vacant properties, to divorce, eviction. So next week, we are getting together, small group, and brainstorming and prioritizing that list. So we got a long laundry list of things, and we're going to come out of that meeting at the end of next week with the list that we're going to go build out as fast as we can. And if there are a few of you, I know that there's been invitations. If there are anybody on this particular call that you're on this call live and you would like to potentially attend next week, it is going to be in Dallas. There is no charge. We're not charging for this event. I think we're going to collect $100, which will cover a really good dinner that we're going to do offsite, and we're going to have lunch catered. But if you would like to come out, it's going to be next Thursday. We're going to be meeting in Dallas. And the day before, a few of us are actually going to go to a Rockefeller Habit one-day event on how to dominate in our industry. So there are a couple more spots available. And email support at salesteamlive.com if you'd like to get the invite. And a little bit more detail. Again, there's a couple more spots. What I would say is if this is we want to have people that have done at least 50 deals in the last 2 years. So it's fairly, you know, if you're a newer real estate investor, we've probably not the best opportunity for next week. But if you've done over 50 deals, we'd love to have you. And I know it's last minute. But anyway, that's that. Chris, any updates that you have on your end that you want to share?
Those of you that are interested, maybe just put in the subject line Dallas when you send your ticket, so that way we can spot it right away and get you the information you need. So maybe put in Dallas in the subject line and then put that you have an interest, and then we'll share with you all the details. I don't have any, there's nothing really pressing on my mind. You said everything I would have even dreamed of saying, Gary Boomershine. So with that, I will say I don't.
Excellent. I'm going to see a couple of people have put up their hands. If you want to ask a question, you can press *5. I want to address one. This came in from Max and Valerie a couple of days ago, Chris, and I thought it would be good on this call for us to discuss. But Max and Valerie were asking about branding and maybe putting their logo on postcards and follow-up letters and pre-sale letters, and wanted to know what our thoughts were on that. And I definitely, you know, that I have a perspective on that, but I'll throw it out to you and see what your thoughts are for branding of, let's start with the postcards. What are your thoughts?
What do you mean as far as putting the logo on the postcards?
Yeah, your business logo on the postcard.
You know, that it just depends. You know, the answer is it depends, right? Because I don't think that the logo would work with the postcards that we send out because it's blind copy. The whole intent of the copy is to get people to call into the 800 number. So by them seeing the logo or any sort of idea as far as what the card is about, then they're not going to call in. And so I think that, number one, on the cards that we currently mail, I don't think it would be a good idea. Number two, if you were to send that kind of postcard out, in the past I have tested any, you know, those type of cards where you're either branding or you're sending out a specific, you know, you're already telling the customer, I'm a house buyer and I'm looking to buy the property and this is my company and we want you to give us a call. You know, in a competitive market, I've always had difficulty with getting the call volume as I would with a blind copy card. And so, because then also at the same time, your card looks like everybody else's who's saying we buy houses cash and who have in essence the same message. So on the postcards, I don't like the idea. On the pre-sale package, you know, the question would be is that I would say sometimes, and I'm not saying this is the case, but I look at whether or not would it be better to have it than not to have it? I don't know, because if I'm getting people that say to me, who are you? Are you a company? And I'm getting those kind of credibility questions. Maybe I would consider it. However, though, before I put the logo on there, I would think about, is there anything else that potentially is the cause of that? Right. So an example, in our local market, we had an issue where people were asking for asking credibility questions. We went out and we built a elaborate seller website in order to give us a better appearance. And then in the end, we found that we were having virtual assistants call these people and they weren't coming across correctly. And so the issue wasn't the website or that we didn't have a logo. It was something else. And so I would say, I don't like the idea of the postcards. On the pre-sale package, I'm not really sure it makes a difference. And I would look at improving other things first before I work on that. That's my opinion.
Yeah. I would totally agree with you on the postcard. Actually, you know, the purpose of the postcard, especially the more aggressive nature of the third notice and property notice, is really to get somebody to raise their hand. An attention grabber that stands out from the other postcards, and the branding has never worked. And actually, even going back to Dan Kennedy and Gary Halbert, an expert, you know, they've been doing this for all industries for, you know, 20, 30 years. It's the copy, the attention grabber, the headlines, and the copy that matters. It's not the branding. I will say on the pre-sale letter, I think if you were to make changes, by the way, we can customize the pre-sale. So let's see, I got a little bit of background here. Hold on, sorry about that. If you wanted to, we've had a couple of members in the REI Vault group that have customized their pre-sale, and that might be a good time to actually add a good logo. You got a good, you know, logo that you want to brand. One of the guys on the East Coast that has branded and customized their pre-sale, they do a lot of TV ads. And so they do have a brand that is recognized. So they added that. But more importantly, they added testimonials. So, you know, we have 6 pages or 7 pages on that pre-sale. And what they did is they actually took pictures of properties that they've purchased and then testimonials from some of the sellers, and they've added that. And the jury is still out as to whether that's had any impact in conversion. We would anticipate, you know, 1 in 7 of those pre-sales could come back fine. That's really the benchmark. And I don't think this particular client that I'm thinking of has had any increase in conversion rates by adding and making those changes. So I don't think it's necessary. The copy actually, you know, does the postcard generate the calls? The national average on postcards right now is 11.4%. That's what we're seeing nationally. During a hot market like Valerie and Max are in California, and I think they're getting somewhere around a 5% response rate. I know in Arizona and in hot markets, even in Florida, the national average being 11.4%, we're seeing about half of that as the response rate. Response rate, by the way, really means the number of unique callers that dial that number. It doesn't mean the number of leads that come into Podio. It just means how many people on that phone number that's on that series of postcards, how many, what are the percentages of people that are dialing? And then the leads that come into Podio are the people that are typically hitting the voicemail system, right? Some people will call, and they won't even hit the voicemail. In order to hit the voicemail, they have to press pound or zero or listen to the entire message. And that's a key indicator. I know that if you're in, like, North Carolina or South Carolina, Alabama, Wisconsin, kind of the – sort of the, some of the rural areas around the country, mostly the center of the country, we'll see, you know, closer to 20% response rate, 25% response rate on the postcard. So anyway, that's for you, Max and Valerie. If you have more questions on it, just press star 5. We can bring you into the call. I'm going to bring in, I think this is, Justin. Justin. British Columbia, you're live. 604.
Hello? Yes, you are correct, Gary. It is Justin.
I'm starting to recognize these phone numbers, Mr. Justin Lane.
Nice.
No, he's there, easy. Yeah. He's the only one from there, from out of the country.
Before I get into my question, just want to say that I am really bummed out that I can't make Dallas, but I am moving my personal residence, so there's no way I can get away. And would love to know if, or would hope that you're going to have another one coming up in the horizon, assuming this one is a success, and maybe somewhere, hopefully in the Pacific time zone.
Hey man, I'm in the Pacific time zone, so you know where I'm going to try to have it.
Hi.
You know, I think Chris and I are liking Dallas because it's central, easy to get to, and, you know, for the two of us. So we may try to do it somewhere in the center of the country. I am going to ask feedback at the end of next week and see if people have found value. We're gonna spend the morning. Everybody's going to present, and we're going to get everybody to share their two or three biggest sucks that are preventing them from making even more money, and use as an opportunity for us to all roundtable to see if we can help give our take and mastermind on that, and then we're going to spend the afternoon prioritizing all the stuff that we want to do with REI Vault.
Cool.
We have a really good laundry list. We got a nice R&D budget to build stuff. I think the big issue, Justin, and this is for everybody, our biggest issue right now is Chris Chico and I have to be the smartest tools in the shed to design everything. And if we could figure out how to, you know, we got 150 people in REI Vault, and if we could get the smart groups to break up, you know, let's just say the subject two. We really want to be able to make offers to buy with seller financing, right? And that really means kind of the marketing, but also how do we want, you know, what's the offer look like and the timing of the offer? We make an all cash offer. And then maybe two or three weeks later, we go with a higher price offer. And then what is the additional collateral that we want for having our sales team make those offers, right? And so if we could figure out how to get a few of us to work on that, we could roll it out for everybody in our group, right? It's just a divide and conquer. And so it's a prioritization of the stuff that we want to do in the order we want to do it, and then how do we attack it? So rather than taking a year to get everything built, how can we do it in 3 months and leverage all of that? So,
yeah,
anyway, we'll have good answers. I know, Justin, we'd love to have you.
Yes, well, hopefully there's another one around the corner soon. So, anyway, my very specific question today is that we got another deal under contract, and we've already got it assigned. Our end buyer he's a developer, so he does have a weasel out clause in that if the city doesn't approve what he wants to do to it, he can weasel out, but, you know, we'll know May 8th we were okay with giving him that because he was willing to pay more than anybody else because he is a developer. So my very specific question is, this lead came from a hang-up callback from our virtual assistant, and we would like to bonus her out on this deal to sort of keep her excited and motivated and engaged. And I know that Chico had recommended that $500 is more than enough compensation to make her happy. That won't give her any sort of crazy amount of money, but it's going to be a lot of money to her. So my very specific question is, can I pay her off the HUD? Do we want to, like, send her some sort of PayPal thing? Like, what is the best way to disperse the monies to her?
This is Shane that came from us, right?
This is Shane. You are correct.
Okay. So I think we paid her Western Digital, right, Chris? In fact,
Western Union. Yeah. So you pay her Western Union. You know, what's interesting is that the pay depends on volume, right? So the one that we have as an assistant to Steve, we pay her $50 a deal, but we do more deals, I think. So in an essence, like you, if you're doing lesser deals, but every deal is really worth a lot of money, obviously, then I'm certainly okay with, you know, giving her that much.
Assuming this deal closes, that $500 will be less than 1% of our assignment fee.
Okay. Yeah.
Let me pull out my calculator. That's a pretty good return. I don't even have to be a mathematician to figure out you guys are going to make a ton of money. I would, if it were me, first and foremost, first off, Western Union, we can get you the information to how to pay her, because we've been paying her for a long time. But that would be number one. The second thing is you may actually want to divide up the $500. That is a lot of money. That would be, you know, that's typically more than a month of what they make over there. If you want to incent properly, you may want to break it up over a period of time just to continuously keep her, you know, totally focused. But anyway, you can figure that out. But it is a lot of money. The problem with paying $500 is you may be setting an expectation because deals may not be as big. You know, did she do an extraordinary job on this particular one that actually got this deal closed just on her follow-up?
I certainly wouldn't say it was extraordinary, no.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is that it came from a hang-up, and had she not been in play, we ain't calling the hang-up, so.
I mean, my comment to that, Gary, is that there was no extraordinary effort on the deal. However, I would say that her extraordinary – there's probably an effort on her part to continuously call every hang-up as best she can, right? Because she never knows the outcome. I mean, she could call 30 people and everybody just says, "That's you, what are you doing, what are you calling?" And she just gets that one. So her ability to sustain that effort to getting through those 30 or 40 people to get to that one that potentially would work out a deal, I think that's definitely, you know, it's the motivation in that. So I look at more in terms of not what's necessarily what she did with that particular caller, but in just general, the months that she's been, you know, messing around with the hang-ups in order to try to get that one deal that, you know, hey, would more than pay for itself.
So I'm just in Podio now. The seller originally called in March 3rd at 7.06 p.m., listened to 4 minutes, hung up. Shane called her the following morning, March 4th at 9.11 a.m., and went through and filled out a bunch of the fields in Podio, tagged me, and sort of away we went.
Okay.
And obviously you can tell this isn't exactly a reasonable amount of time. But so anyway, the bottom line is that we want to bonus her out. Like, I want her to see that there are, you know, her efforts. It's not like she's just mindlessly calling people and that we actually get deals out of this and you could make more money if you hustle. And
yeah, I would just say whatever you pay her, make it so that it becomes like something you can standardize, right? So in this example, if $500 is X amount of your profit, then maybe that becomes a standard for you, right? So that she knows that she has to get the best price possible on every deal. And not necessarily, but rather that she has to make whatever effort possible to get you the information, right? And it becomes a percentage of whatever the profit is, if you're okay with that. But make it, whatever you pay, make it something that could be standardized so that in the end, it's not like she's getting paid $500 and she thinks she's going to get paid $500 on a deal and you only make $2,000 and so that's the reason it's not possible, right? Does that make sense? So I would just say pay it in that way. But either way, it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, for sure. My last thing, Justin, then we can move on. I'd pay a flat amount for the conversion as opposed to a percentage because she can look at when she's doing that function as calling hangups, you kind of want her to be thinking of a flat fee because, you know, she could, $500 is that's kind of what she would be expecting or whatever the amount is. And
well,
she could say, wow, if I could close, you know, 3 people off of hangups this month at $100 a pop, that, you know, that's pretty life-changing type of thing.
Here's the thing. I do want to make it standardized. I want to put no thought into how much I'm paying her. So, you know, I had originally spoken to Chris about this, and the number that I floated to Chris, he was like, no, dude, that's way too much money. So then we sort of ratcheted it down to $500. I mean, I'll do whatever you guys think is best or, you know, I mean,
the last thing, I'll tell you my take. You might want to do like $50 for a qualified conversion. So somebody that goes from a hang-up to a qualified lead that they get you on the phone is a good lead, right? You get it under contract. And then maybe another $100 if you close that deal. So she, you know, there's a double incentive. So 50 and another 100 so that she can make both. Then she realizes, hey, I make money for the conversion, and it's going to get into contract. That there's a team effort, and then she's going to make more money. So she wants to, you know, she's going to make more money for those deals that get converted. That's probably what the way I would do it. Most sales organizations, when you have an inside sales team, you would pay them that way. You basically pay them for the converted qualified lead, you know, an appointment set. And then if the deal actually closes, you'd pay them another bonus. That's the way I would set that up, and I'd standardize it, not have it as a percentage.
Okay.
And then at the end of the year, you can always give her a Christmas bonus on top of that, you know, with the idea that they stay with you for the long haul. And then if you want to pay her, you know, the extra $350 down the road, then do it, you know, at a meaningful time in the year.
Okay. Okay, but the bottom line is that she shouldn't be paid off the HUD, and I just should send her the money privately, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. That was it.
Good deal.
All right.
Good to hear.
It looks like Haynes, 678, you are live.
Gary?
Haynes, you on?
Hey.
How are you?
Doing all right. Yeah, no real specific question.
Hey, Haynes, we can barely hear you.
Oh, well, I don't know what to do. I'm talking loud. How's that?
Okay, no, that's perfect.
That's better.
Okay. No specific question, just got 2 or 3 more I'm trying to get this week, and I get them on the contract. So, trying to get back on track, or get on track, brother.
Excellent. And I know you and I spoke last night, your time,
yep.
Haynes. You got a deal under contract, and the question, you got the deal under contract at $100,000. Seller was very fixated on that $100,000. It's a free and clear house, but as you're running the math, it just didn't look like a deal that you were going to be able to make work. It's not a deal that you can rehab. If you can make any money, you're asking the question about would this be a good wholesale deal, right?
Right, right.
And I think this is a good one, Chris. I'd love for everybody, because this is pretty common. The seller was fixated on $100,000. Haynes talked to me a week ago, and I said, you know what, get it under contract. Get it under contract. Half the battle is getting the seller committed and give you an opportunity to see if there's any opportunity here. Let the seller know that, you know, it's going to be obviously contingent upon seeing it, you know, if he can make it work. And I told Haynes that there's a a good chance he's going to have to go back and renegotiate with the seller in probably the 80 to 85,000 range. And we do this
right.
all the time. Right, Chris?
Yeah, you know, you do the best you can. I would say that, you know, some deals you come across and you put on the contract and you know you're going to sell. And other times, you know, you don't know, right? So it's questionable. You're going to take a chance on it. So, you know, the ones that are like that, then you might have an offer from a buyer that's below your asking, and then you'll go back to the seller. If you pick up a deal, if you tie up a deal and you put one on the contract that you believe upfront at the very beginning that it may be a difficult deal, you can always tell the seller. You can say, you know what, you know, I think I can get this approved. You know, I think I can get this through my funding partners. I'm not going to know for sure until we start the process. And then at that point, then, you know, you say, you're going to tell them you're going to do your best. And then what happens is that you're kind of positioning yourself almost so that if you come back to them and you say, I wasn't able to get it through and it's going to be, I'm going to need a little bit of help on the price, then it's a little bit easier for you. Maybe because then they kind of were expecting it based on your previous conversation, although that may not always be the case because sellers get amnesia about your previous conversations. They only remember what they want to remember. So that's my answer.
Yeah, that's what I tell the seller is, I said, look, you know, I go 100 and I'd offered him 90. I said, I go 100, but still my investors have to prove this. So several of them will be coming by the house. So he knows it's not a done deal until I get an investor to come forward. So I think he's
positioned
it pretty well.
No, perfect.
I mean, I think you're approaching it the right way. So
okay.
Perfect. The other question that Haynes had, Chris, was just he asked my perspective as to should he do a – he doesn't have any buyers for this particular deal right at the moment. Would we recommend sending out a buyer campaign? And my recommendation to Haynes, I said, you know, as a best practice and something we do, every time we get a property under contract, we actually do a buyer campaign. It's just something that we do internally. You know, we're always trying to build our buyers list. And so we just, every property we get under contract, we drop a couple $100 worth of mail as part of our process and see if we can get two or three new buyers that will either buy this property or buy other properties down the road. That was my recommendation. And also going out to maybe, I told Haynes that this particular deal at the price, he may need to find a more of a novice real estate investor, somebody that's kind of a first-time investor, maybe going to a real estate club. Maybe working with some local real estate agents who work with first-time investors might be a good approach. This is definitely a market. You know, a lot of people are jumping into the real estate market looking to get their feet wet.
Right.
And we got a guy in South Florida, and Chris and I, this is a buyer that we've done quite a bit of business with and scaling up with him in South Florida. And we met with him for lunch, I don't know, 6 or 7 weeks ago, and he consistently is able to make more money off of these deals that we're flipping to him than anybody else. And he said that his number one type of buyer is coming through a realtor and they're first-time investors, people that, you know, mom and dad have a lot of money and their kids are getting into the rehab game and parents are dropping some cash for the kids to get their feet wet. And so, you know, if they can get a deal a little under market, they're happy. Chris?
I would say every market is different. So I think I would kind of do a, you know, there's a finding buyers section in the Kajabi membership area. And in there, I discuss Craigslist. I discuss doing some searches on YouTube, on YouTube and on Google search, and how to go and find other wholesalers. So in the beginning, I think you got to kind of have to do all of it, because you don't know what's going to work best in your market and where the best buyers are going to come from. And so I do like the idea of, you know, Craigslist, you're going to get some novice buyers, which is fine, and you're going to get some real estate agents. But I think you got to have to go wide as best you can, other wholesalers as well, and to try and do your best to try to get as many eyeballs on that property. And as you and to figure out what works best in your market for the type of deals you're picking up and what kind of buyer you need for those particular deals. And so I think you just I would just try as many as you can, and then eventually you'll come to one or two that work the best.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool. Anything else, Dean, while we have you?
No, that's great. Appreciate it so much.
Excellent.
Thank you. Keep us posted.
Okay. Sure will.
All right.
All right. Next, this is either Ryan or Bucky. 918 area code. You guys are live.
Can you hear me?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Ryan?
All right, well, I've got kind of a unique deal I was hoping to get some advice on. I've got 2.6 acres locked down in a fairly hot area in Jenks, Oklahoma, surrounded by, I mean, right across the street, I got a $2.2 million house. I've got these 2.6 acres for $380, and kind of looking for some ideas on marketing it right now. I've sent it out to my buyers list, and that's 500 strong. Sent it out to the HBA, the Home Builders Association. And then I've got the little SMS text messaging campaign and bandit signs surrounding this house. And I'm just kind of looking for any other ideas that you guys may have had success with in the past as far as marketing to developers and home builders and that kind of stuff.
Well, typically in your market, are the home builders buying existing homes, tearing them down, and then rebuilding, or are they buying vacant land themselves and then building on them?
They're doing everything. Yeah, like right now, these 2.6 acres, I've got one house that's basically completely remodeled. All it needs is a roof. The other is sitting on the 1 acre, and that's just a tiny house that was built 10 years ago that if we end up selling it to a developer, we're just going to pick up that house and move it and sell it to somebody that wants to put it on some acres. There's a lot of that going on in Oklahoma just because there's so much country. There's always people looking to move houses out on the land, so our goal is to pick that one up and sell it to somebody. And I'm really, you know, I think the buyer here is going to be somebody looking to build their, you know, mega dream home, I guess you would say. But there is $1.2 million houses, you know, I'd say a solid 7 iron away, sitting on half-acre lots. Right across the street is a $2.2 million house sitting on 2.5 acres. And it's surrounded by a whole bunch of new construction houses. I mean, obviously getting in touch with those builders is a goal, but I'm just looking for any outside-of-the-box ideas on marketing to these kind of people.
Well, the thing I could, right off the bat, I mean, we could do on a buyer's mailing campaign, we could see if there's any recent buyer transactions for people purchasing vacant land. Depending on the price point. So, like, what's the assessed value on this land here that you have?
The assessed value on one of them is $280, and I think the other one is $180.
So, theoretically,
I don't have a lot of faith in the assessed values out here just because these houses have been built or owned for so long that the assessed values just kind of lag behind, you know, what they actually are because they get reset every time, you know.
Yeah, well, I was asking for the assessed value more for the list, for the sourcing of the list. So, if I, hypothetically, the type of buyer that might buy that property, would it be the same type of buyer that buys a, you know, $15,000 lot in a crappy neighborhood? Probably not. It'd probably be somebody who's building on that type of neighborhood, right? And so we could, if you want to send a request for a buyer campaign, we could do something where you want to, if you want to only target land, people that have purchased land over the last 6 months of maybe assessed value of $100,000 or more, and potentially you can get, you know, there might be people on that list that then are builders that obviously if they bought land already, then they might be in a position to buy vacant land from you. The other thing would be is, do you have access to the MLS?
Yeah.
So I would do a search on properties recently sold, that had a year built of, say, within the last year. And it potentially that could be an agent that listed the home for a builder. And if that's the case, then might that agent may also have, may their clients be interested in buying additional acreage to buy?
Yeah, so, okay, that's a good idea. Just go after the realtors who have recently sold land or, you know, the houses in that price.
Yeah, exactly. Recently sold land or a house that was just recently built, like built in 2014 or 15. So, you know, it's a newly built house.
Yeah.
So those are the two ideas that kind of come off the top of my head. And if you had any other, and then obviously, advertising on Craigslist. But, you know, Craigslist, it's tough. You're looking for, you know, I like that idea. The two ideas, direct mail and also the agents. The agents could be really key because, you know,
yeah.
You get one or two agents and they have 10 buyers each or, you know, a handful of buyers and all of a sudden now you're working with a wider reach, right, automatically.
That's a great idea. I will pull that off the MLS and start banging out on the phones there. And the other thing we were doing actually on this one is something I've never done before, but we ended up putting it up on eBay as an auction with a price point of $220, and just letting the market kind of dictate, you know, what it's going to go for. And that auction went live today, so I have my buyer's list this morning. So we'll kind of see how that goes.
The other thing I would just do is I would search, just in case, search on the Google as sell my vacant land or sell vacant land in your particular city, just in case somebody might be optimizing for that, and if that might be a buyer or may have a resource for that. So that's the other thing I would think about is run that search on Google and see if anything shows up on Google and on YouTube, just in case.
Okay, yeah, I will do all of that. Those are all great ideas.
You're definitely looking for a very specific buyer. I think it's going to be either a developer that's bought and developed in the last 18 months or 24 months.
I mean, they're all over surrounding the south.
Yep.
So we've written down all the names and numbers of all the builders that are building here, and we're going to start banging out phone calls to those guys.
Is this Ryan or Bucky?
This is Ryan.
Hey, Ryan. So, Ryan, if you can, if you have a RealQuest report for that particular lead, I would attach it. If you're going to do a buyer campaign, I would attach it. So that we can actually look at the demographics of the particular deal when we're doing a search for buyers for that type of product, right? I definitely work on getting a list, like a builder's list of, you know, identify that you can actually not only send them direct mail, right, our postcards, but, you know, working to get the phone numbers. So it's going to be developers, right? It's going to be realtors that have worked with developers looking for that specific product. The other thing I would do, I think that the buyer postcard will still work for that list for sure.
Okay.
If it were me, I would, in addition, I would write up I'd take the pre-sale letter. You can download it on the REI Vault from the REI Vault site and just take that letter and create one. I'd create a letter and put it into a FedEx type of package and mail it to a handful of developers. I mean, you could have one that says, here's the particular product, I'd have a couple of pictures or what have you, and let them know that you're looking for a developer. The reason you want a FedEx type of package in a 9x12, just like our pre-sale, is you want them to know you're serious, you're professional, and something they're not going to throw away, right? Postcard gets them to call kind of in a sneaky way, and it'll work, but they're going to read it, and they're going to most likely call you, and if you could drop that in the mail, right, immediately follow up with each of them, saying, hey, I sent you a package where, you know, can I talk with the acquisition manager, and then, you know, get them on the phone? You probably don't have to have a lot of phone calls in order to get the property sold if you have a price right.
Yeah, I mean, and that's there's so many things that you could do. I feel like with this property that is turned, you know, you could have somebody that wants to build their dream house while living in a fully remodeled house, but I think with what's going on around here, I'm looking at a developer or a builder. So my next stop here today is over at Kerry Davis Homes, and he's one of the biggest builders in Tulsa. So I was going to sit down with him and pick his brain on how to pitch this as well. But I like the pre-sale package idea and immediately following up. I think that's a great idea.
Awesome. If you need to get that out, by the way, if you write it up, and you just need those to go out immediately, you can send them. You can email them over. And just for this one, if you just don't have the FedEx package and you want those to go out, we can get those out for you. If you
okay.
Want.
Well, I will work on that today, and I'll probably shoot any. Where should I shoot that email? Just to deal
support. Support at salesteamwise.com. And you might have to just on this particular one, just to get it out. You can say, per the call with Gary on the huddle call, and then copy me on it if you want.
Okay.
Or put on the email. Just say, per Gary or something that so I get notified of it. I can just help direct.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the help, gentlemen. That was good info.
That's awesome. Hey, Ryan, did that come off the postcard that we mailed or something else?
It came off a postcard that we mailed to a different property that she owned down in Glenpool, and just in talking with her, she had this one that was listed with the realtor and it expired, and the day after it expired, I just put it under an option contract, and she had mentioned that her neighbor sitting on an acre right next door was interested in selling, so I just walked over there and knocked on the door and ended up getting that one under option contract as well, so... I don't have a real commitment to buy it, but I've got 30 days to bring them an offer.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. You know, for everybody on the call, don't underestimate, think outside the box. A lot of deals come from other properties, referrals, even some of the angry calls. I think I shared this story last year, but a few years ago, there was a postcard that we mailed that went to the wrong address. And a lady called and said, I've got somebody I know. Do you guys buy a vacant, luxury homes in Vermont? And this was a postcard we mailed in Los Angeles. And can you buy anything? So anyway, I ended up picking up a property, a 7,400-square-foot free-and-clear house in Vermont that we made made $260,000 on it. And it came
wow.
from a postcard that went to the wrong address. This is a guy that lived in a castle in Scotland. I kid you not. He was a massive alcoholic, and he very, very wealthy guy. It took us about 4 months to get the deal signed, and he wanted $1.6 million, and I ended up picking it up for $950,000 on an option agreement with a dollar down. So, don't underestimate the opportunities to come off of, postcards that have wrong addresses or, people
yeah.
have neighbors, apartments.
I had a real angry call back the other day, and I called them back anyways, and I just ended up putting it under contract for $25,000, and I'm going to end up chewing his roof on an insurance claim. So it's going to work out. Don't underestimate the option contracts. The deals are skinny. Only cost you $10 and you're not committing yourself to anything. I do a lot of those now.
Yeah, that's awesome. Love it. Love it. Good stuff, Ryan. Any other question, I'll put you back on hold here.
Oh, no worries. I appreciate you guys' help, and I'll see you next week in Dallas.
All right. See ya. All right. This is Art. I'm bringing you on. 412 area code.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Art.
How you guys doing today?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, as long as I'm keep closing on properties, that makes me happy camper.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it does. I just today really needed to pick your brain about what I've been kind of evaluating what is, in my opinion, been holding me back a little bit. And I just need to break through this situation, which is I have a tendency not to make offers on properties, because I don't have buyers. Now, this is kind of a twofold, question, but I understand what your philosophy is on, just get it under contract, and then find the buyer. Okay? Well, I have a problem with that, and I don't know why I have a problem with that, but I do. Okay? And as a result, a lot of these leads are just kind of piling up on me, things that I know I could make offers on, get them under contract. And the other thing that's holding me back in the back of my head is I did run a buyer's campaign that kind of backfired on me, and I think, Gary, you had responded to Daria about this. All I got were hang-ups. Okay, it was on the buyer's list. It wasn't on the seller's list. She forwarded me your email. I couldn't respond to it because it came from her email. But anyway, I need to get that taken care of. I don't know why all I got were 80-some hang-ups, but that's what I got. And I know I could sit here and make offer after offer after offer and get these under contract. It's not a hard thing to do. And I know I can price them right, and I know I can do it, but I don't have enough buyers in the specific zip codes that I'm getting these sales in, because what's happening is I'm getting a lot of referrals. Properties are in different areas and different zip codes than where my buyers really want to be. So where do I go from here?
Well, just to make sure I understand, when you say backfired, you mean that you did the buyer mailing campaign and just you didn't get anything. You just got hang-ups, so you didn't get any messages, right?
I got zero messages, I guess I had addressed this with support because they told me that I had a bad 800 number. And I'm like, okay, can we fix it? And I'm not quite sure how and what I need to do to fix it, because I'm willing to run a buyer's campaign, but I'm not willing to run a buyer's campaign and have it have what happened to me this past one. I just, that's stupid, unless I get that number fixed.
And what about,
let me make sure we troubleshoot that phone number. There may be a technical issue, Art, so let me just separate that versus the psychological piece of how to get buyers. I would agree. You've been stuck on this buyer thing for a while. I think that
Yes. You
need to have a more coordinated plan to go. You need to be a buyer magnet, right? Psychologically, it's like you need to solve the buyer problem, which means you're going to have a very, very focused time to go identify and build your buyer's list. And probably, you know you can get deals. You know you can get sellers, and you're going to get deals under contract. So let's go knock out the buyer problem. On the technical issue with your buyer campaign, we'll go and spend some more time trying to troubleshoot. There is a possibility that there was, usually we get clean 800 phone numbers. We buy the phone numbers and we test them for at least 30 days to make sure that they don't get junk calls. All 800 numbers are all recycled.
Right.
So you could have an insurance company that just went out of business, and they get millions of phone calls, right? But we just make sure they're clean. There may be something wrong with the campaign, or there may be something wrong with the phone number, and we'll just have to troubleshoot. We'll get an answer back on this within 24 hours. Okay. On that.
Okay.
So I'll make sure that happens. Debbie's on this call, so I know she's taking notes on that. And then in terms of going after Chris, let's see if we can address the buyer thing of different ways for Art. Because you're going to have to do a little bit more than direct mail. If you're stuck on buyers.
Well, I guess my question is that aside from direct mail, well, first of all, the deals that – well, aside from direct mail, are you doing anything else on a consistent basis to get the buyers or no?
I'm picking – no, to answer your question. I'm
okay.
Getting a lot of them from Craigslist. I actually established some pretty good relationships with buyers from the properties that I posted on Craigslist, so that's where a lot of them have been coming from. But other than that,
yeah.
No.
I mean, as far as the buyers are concerned, it's a gradual process, right? So the thing I would say on that is that you focus on the process, not the outcome. And so, in other words, then – you know, the only thing you can, there's only a few things that you have control over, which is you know, you're posting on a regular basis to Craigslist. If you do the buyer mailing campaigns, you're monitoring it, and if maybe in your market the buyer mailing campaigns don't give you the right kind of buyers, and obviously you put those on hold. Reaching out, trying to get MLS a list of agents who recently sold properties as a selling agent for as a cash deal, and trying to speak with those agents and seeing if they have buyers or if they want to be put on your mailing list. You know, the PDF that I have shows going to on Google and YouTube and searching for Sell My House Fast and what your particular area and the various other searches to see who's advertising and reaching out to them. And they might be a wholesaler and they might have other buyers or they might be a buyer themselves, et cetera. So, you know, as far as the buyer process, the only thing you could focus on is just, focusing on the process. You know, and you can't do everything, but in the beginning, you got to do more because you don't know what's going to stick and what's going to work. You might find that Craigslist, you might try 10 different things in Craigslist and maybe speaking with agents gives you the best output, and so then you focus on those. The question so as far as the buyers, the only thing you can do is just consistently, be going out there trying to gather additional buyers. In terms of the, I would think of it is that the question I have for you on the seller side is that you say that you don't want to put properties on a contract because you don't have a buyer's list. What I would say is, moving up, in computer speak, moving up by directory, I would say question whether or not it's really, is it really the fact that you don't have buyers or is it something else? Like, in other words, you don't want to put properties in the contract, not really because you don't have a buyer's list, but because you don't like to have that conversation with a seller to have to tell them that you're not going to pick up their deal. Or perhaps that you have to come back to them and ask for price reduction, and you know that's going to be a difficult conversation. So my question to you on that is it really about not having the buyer's list or is it really about something else?
That's a great question. I think part of it could be that when I make an offer, I like to know that I have a buyer, okay?
Right.
Have I gone back and, given price reductions and things like, yeah, that's not a problem. I don't have a problem doing that because usually it's so far, in my short-lived career here, they haven't been major, cuts, because the price deals that I'm dealing in are, they're not real high-end, but, $4,000 or $5,000. And usually it's not a major deal to the seller. So, and I've done it on numerous deals. But I don't have a problem.
Thinking,
go ahead.
You just have a problem. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Making an offer and then knowing that I don't have an end buyer. I don't know.
Well, I think thinking about how you make offers to begin with, and you and I have had this discussion. When we make offers, we say that we're the buyer, but you don't like coming across that way because, and I think it has to do kind of with the same reasoning behind it. I think it comes down to a change in perspective, right? So the meaning that you attach to you wanting to make an offer, you don't feel comfortable making an offer of the seller if you don't have a buyer in place. And so for you, you want to make an offer with certainty so that when you're talking with a seller, that you know that you have a solution for them versus if you don't have a buyer, then perhaps you're thinking that you're misleading the seller or that you're not being upfront with them. And I think it's not an easy, I'm trying to think of if there's a book that I can recommend you, but it's not an easy fix in terms of what you have to do is really what it comes down to is changing the meaning of that whole conversation that's going on inside your head from, the perspective of, I'm just going off the top of my head, but you're thinking, if I make an offer to the seller and I don't have a buyer in place and I'm being disingenuous to the seller versus, so that's one meaning, right? Another meaning could be that, I could look at it and say, whenever I make an offer to a seller and whenever I don't make an offer to the seller because I don't have a buyer, that really means that I am holding myself back from making the type of money that I should make in this business. Or, whenever I make an offer to a seller and I only commit to those sellers that I only have a buyer for,
then I'm actually doing a disservice to all those other sellers that I'm leaving standing out there, that if I did take a chance on a deal, I might be able to help them. But I'm not, because of the fact that I'm not giving them the opportunity to work with me. And so it's like, I'm just trying to think about if there's a book that I read recently that and I have to I'll make a recommendation to the group on this, but it's really about the meaning that you're attaching to this, right? Because the reality is the same. If I were to go into your market and make the same offers to the same sellers, it's really a head game, right? And that's what you're saying here. But the meaning that you're attaching to this is what's holding you back. So you have to, like, for example, an example with me is that I tend to be a non-confrontational person, right? So whenever there's a difficult conversation involved, I tend not to have that conversation. So I have to then change my perspective about that conversation from a pain conversation. I have to shift the pain. So in other words, if you and I are going to have a difficult conversation, I could easily say, well, gee, I don't want to have that conversation because then, you know, maybe, you know, we're going to have friction on the call. Maybe he's not going to think of me in the same way that I think, you know, that he thinks of me now. And I go through all these things in my head. So I have to change that meaning to say, you know what, whenever I have difficult conversations, that means that I'm growing. So whenever I get on the phone and have a conversation with someone that I'm going to have friction with, that's not a pain point for me. That's a pain point, but in the same way I go to the gym and I flex my muscles and then the next day I'm stronger because of that conversation. So it takes me shifting the meaning of that conversation in my head so that then I could make those necessary calls that perhaps I might delay or procrastinate about. And so I don't know if that helps in any way, but that's what it comes down to, is it's your perception of that conversation with the seller. So you have to attach a different meaning to that. That in fact that and you know the ways to do that is it's either pain or pleasure. So you have to attach pain to the fact that, you know, whenever you don't tie up a property, that means that then potentially for every one seller that, you know, for every 10 sellers that you don't put on the contract, then that means that you're losing X amount of money, or that means you're continuing to mail and have lackluster results, or that you just continue to just work and struggle and not make the kind of money. You have to attach a different meaning to that, because the meaning that you're attaching to it now isn't serving you. I don't know if that helps or not, or maybe that's too vague of a comment, but that's kind of my general thought right now on that.
No, that's fine. I know it's holding me back, and I need to push through it. I just need to push through it, and maybe, you know, attaching a different meaning to it. Yes, I'm probably like you, Chris. I don't like confrontation. You know, and I like to be. I'm pretty much a straight shooter.
Right.
You know, I tell them, you know, if they specifically ask me, what are you doing? How are you doing this? I don't lie to them. I tell them that, yeah, well, I'm a wholesaler and I have a pool of funding partners. I'm trying to get around the fact that, you know, I still want them to think I'm buying the property with my funding partners, is the way I've been spinning it lately, just trying to get.
Yeah, but see, everything is a perception issue, right? Because if you say to me that I don't want to tell them that I'm the buyer because I'd be lying, then I make offers to sellers all the time and I tell them I'm the buyer and I don't think I'm lying. It's the same thing. We're doing the same thing, because in their eyes, you know, I am the buyer, because I am, you know, what constitutes a buyer? I'm putting it on the contract. And then through my resources and my abilities, I have other buyers that I can assign the deal to. But I think even just doing that, I think holds you back, because of the fact that, you know, if I'm a seller, you know, there are going to be some sellers that are not going to give you the deal because they don't see you as the buyer. They don't see you as, hey, I want to give this deal to Art, and I know that it's a done deal. The way you present it is going to lead to also additional problems too. And so I think that my question is, and maybe this is something to think about, sometimes it's hard to make a change when you're having to make a big change, right? So I think about incremental change. So I look at incremental change in patterns, right? So as you're talking and you're thinking about making an offer to the seller, you know, is there a pattern that you run through in your head about the things you think about or about various other things that kind of put you in that state of mind where you don't feel comfortable, you know, making that kind of an offer to the seller or taking advantage of that deal and trying to figure out, you know, is there a pattern of thought or pattern of what you say that then leads to that conversation, and is there a way to fix it? Is there a way to kind of change that in some way so that you disrupt the pattern? The other way to approach it is looking at it in increments, right? So I think that to me it feels like maybe the first step isn't you trying to pick up more deals and that you were going to take a chance on. Maybe the first step might be for you to present yourself as the buyer and do that differently than you've been doing now, right? And then when you start presenting yourself that way, then all of a sudden now you kind of flex your muscle there, and now that enables you to maybe approach that next obstacle, which is taking more chances on deals, right? And so does that make sense? Like, in other words, don't, you know, are there small incremental changes that you can do that are easier but will build momentum in how you perceive things so that eventually it's like, you know, lifting a weight. I'm not going to lift 200 pounds the first day I go to the gym. I have to work my way up to it. So is there a way that you could work your way up to that so then now you can put more properties on the contract? And I would say it could be that you start trying to get yourself to position yourself as the buyer and not the guy that's trying to find a buyer, because I think that's problematic also.
Let me throw a couple other things in here. I know that we're a little over on our hour today, but this is important. So, Art, you're in a hot market, right? You agree
yeah.
with that?
Yes.
So you're in a very hot market. And are there buyers out there that are just itching for deals and they got money but they can't find deals? Would you say that that's accurate?
Yes.
A lot of – so – and would you also say that you believe that you're a man of your word, that that's your word and your integrity, and speak straight, talk straight, not being full of nonsense and hot air is very important to you, right?
Yes.
All right, so us two. So there's a book, Samurai Selling, which is Honor Your Customer. And so when I buy property, it's like I want to honor my customer, my seller. They're giving me a really good deal, and I say I'm going to do something, I want to go do it. So I think you really do need to go solve this buyer problem. And you need to address it, and, you know, this has been going on for, like, 6 months. I know that this has been a big issue. So you need to, and there's going to be a transitionary period. You've got to give yourself 90 days. You're going to say, in 90 days from today, if you are going to be a buyer magnet, then you're going to have plenty of buyers, and buyers are going to want to come to you in droves, and you're no longer going to have to worry about buyers. Your issue is going to be finding product for your buyers, right? Because if you had the buyers, then you wouldn't have to worry anymore about how you feel about yourself or your integrity or your word, because you've got people that actually are itching to close those deals and put their teams to work, and everybody needs to get paid, right?
Right.
So you got 90 days. And there's going to be a little bit of an uncomfortable transition, because you still have to – you can't just focus all your time on buyers, but you do need to solve it. You need to have a plan, and you need to probably get out of your office a bit and really focus on it. It probably means you're going to have to go to some real estate clubs. You're incredibly social. You know how to talk to people, and you probably need to get out there and put more of a concerted effort into working with some of the local realtors, probably getting engaged in some of the local real estate clubs, maybe some of the meetup groups as well, and present yourself and do some presentations. Say, hey, you know, my name's Art. I have a lot of deals, and I'm looking for buyers that have cash that can close quickly for these deals. And use as an opportunity to go stand up in front of the real estate club, bring some flyers with some pictures and some samples, and get out there and network. The other thing is in your local market, possibly, and elsewhere, probably connecting with some people that are really, really good on the buyer side. There are a lot of wholesalers that do nothing other than work with buyers. They play the middleman, and so getting engaged, you got the direct mail, you got, you know, our approach for buyers. And that's part of the picture. but you probably are going to have to get out of your house a lot more and go find these buyers. You only need a handful of them, but, you know, and those buyers will refer other friends to you, right, and other people. That's what I would do. You know, what do you think about Matt Andrews as a connection for some of the stuff that Matt does? Do you think he would be a good contact for Art, Chris?
I think maybe. I don't know. I think that the no. I mean, if he's not doing the basic stuff that we have in Kajabi, Matt's stuff is more elaborate and requires more work. So I think consistently doing the basic items, I would think, come first, because then Matt is done. That stuff is going to send him down a rabbit hole of a bunch of other stuff, in my opinion.
Okay.
And I think you got more of a head game than you have a buyer problem. That's my thought.
Okay.
I'm trying to think about if there's a book. I have to give it some thought, Art. I'll make a note of it. I'll share it, whatever resource I give you on the call. We'll share that out to everyone else as well and see if I can come up with a book or something that – let me think about that, because it's really it's a mindset. And, you know, I say this because, you know, I have a personal coach and somebody who's helped me get through, you know, some obstacles that – for other people who look at it, and it's easy for somebody else to see your problems, right? Somebody else says, hey, Chico, what the hell you're doing? I can't believe you're doing that. But you internally, you don't see your own problems because you're inside your head. And I think you need I need a different perspective. And I think that more tactical things isn't going to solve the issue. This conversation here, this item, is something that's going to continue to hold you back. And so it needs to be fixed. I'll make some recommendations, and whatever recommendations I share with ours, I'll share them with the group as well. And let me give that a little bit of thought. I'll make a note of it for today, and I'll shoot you an email later today, and I'll make whatever resource I make available. I recommend to you, I'll share it with the group as well.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank you. Yeah, thanks.
No problem.
Cool. Chris, we are over. I still see
Why don't we take care of the last few ones? We have two more hands, and then we'll knock them out.
All right.
You want to do it, or?
I think this is Steve Carlson. Steve, you're live. 210.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. I know it's running past time. I'm looking for a list that my VA can go scour the internet for and throw into, like, a high weeds campaign. And the reason I need this because partly I have a BA that doesn't have enough to do. I'm not keeping it busy enough, so I'm wondering if there's like a garage sale garage sale list that's good or estate sales or, you know, some obscure kind of list that he can go search for and throw into the high weeds campaign. You got any recommendations around that?
Have you heard the results from Justin on the garage sale stuff?
I don't. That's what I was thinking about, but I don't know what results he's had with that.
Steve, I will. I know we're meeting. You're gonna be in Dallas with us. I'm gonna connect you with Justin.
Okay.
Because Justin actually put Shane to work on a garage sale model of looking at the state sales and garage sales. And we did direct mail off of that. I'll connect you guys. Put that on the list. Debbie, I know you're on, so if you capture that, we'll connect you.
Mm-hmm.
That'll happen here shortly. Did you talk to David? I actually reached out to David today on the list that you're working on. Did you talk to him about the tax delinquents?
David?
Yeah, the guy that gave you the list that you're working on, and we're doing a custom list with you on vacants.
Oh, the vacants. Okay. No, he didn't reach back out to me. No.
Okay. I have a call with him scheduled for tomorrow, and I'll talk to him about tax delinquents. That may be of interest as well.
for you?
I have access to, I go down to one courthouse and get the tax delinquent list twice a year and mail to that. And then there's another list provider here in San Antonio, just in the San Antonio area, so I can get the tax delinquent list through them as well.
What about code violations?
No, I don't know how to get to code violations.
Okay. Brainstorm that one next week.
Good.
Yeah. Let's you know what? We'll start with Justin and chat with him because you've had Shane do a whole bunch of additional work, and maybe you can talk with him as to some of the additional things. We'll also, by the way, we Gabe and Percy, who will be out there next week, they're working with Mark. That's a inside sales VA, and they've put Mark to work, and so it'll be an opportunity to hang out and connect with those guys. They're right in your backyard too. They're in Fort
Worth, exactly. Yeah.
And Dallas, so you'll have a chance to interact with them. And also Todd Keith from Arlington is going to come out. So I think you'll get some. Yeah. You'll probably be able to get your VA to work pretty fast.
Yeah. Good deal. Fantastic. Thank you very much.
All right. Last question I'm going to bring in is, hold on really quick. Last question is going to be from 916. I think this is Valerie and Max. You guys live?
Hi, yes. Thank you. This is Valerie.
Hi, Valerie.
Hi, I just want to say thank you for the input on the branding. We will do it on pre-sale letters. Thank you very much.
Awesome. I'll send you I'll have Debbie send you a sample. So
okay.
You guys at least have a starting place. I would actually take the one that we're going to send you and use that as an example.
Okay, great. And also I want to get your input on trying to get more successes and doing deals, and that we're offering sellers less than 50% of the ARV. For example, if a home is, the ARV is $100,000, we would offer $48,000, and want to see if you have some ideas other than the buyer's campaign on how to have more successes.
More successes in terms of getting better pricing from the sellers, or
getting more sellers to contract.
I see. Okay, so in other words, you're making offers at 40%, and what's the differential between in general between where you're making offers versus where they're at? Is it on a typical $100,000 property, you're making an offer 40, but typically that seller is at what price?
$80,000.
Okay, and what I find
are these all fixers? Are these properties that need work?
Generally, yes.
In our experience, and now this is what we've been finding is really the sellers that are when we have similar numbers like that. A lot of times, what ends up happening is that it's really time, like it's a timing issue. Because we've had many deals where the sellers have wanted those kind of prices, and we made an offer of 40. Yeah, we could go up a little bit, but it's just too big of a gap. And then the situation unravels or changes over the next 30 days, and all of a sudden now they come back and we go up a little bit, they come down, and now we're able to get a better number. Because sometimes when you initially speak with the seller, they have high hopes that they can get what they want, that the market is different, and then, I think it becomes a follow-up process with the combination of the pre-sale along with phone calls and being there at the point in time where they are, now something's unraveled and now they're ready to do something. And that's
good.
Where we've had the most success.
That's good, but in our case, what we do is refer them to one of our realtors because we're agency also to get them to list it traditionally. So we don't have that volume of follow-up to do.
That's an interesting question you brought up because, so one of the challenges, and I hadn't talked to you about this, Gary, but I have we do marketing in different areas, and One of them is Palm Beach, and I have somebody who's a realtor who can potentially, we can send the properties to the list. And I'm thinking about, well, if I send the properties to the list, now we don't have our own agency, right? So the numbers are different. But on your side, the 3% commission equates to a certain amount of money. Part of my hesitancy is that am I sending away bigger checks to get a smaller one? And I'm not sure that there's an answer to that, but rather that if I feel that, you know, we're kind of off, but maybe the person, there's something there about their situation that leads me to believe that, you know what, I have a feeling that they're going to get in over their head, or you know what, they're testing the market, and I think that they're going to realize that the property needs way too much work, and or whatever situation I think is brewing there, I have a tendency to then hold that off and not give it to a realtor because, yes, I might make a commission I make money on the commission, but am I giving up a bigger profit? Because if I would have just waited, would I have gotten a bigger, you know, would I have gotten a price that would enable me to make more money? And I'm not saying that that's an answer to your question, but that's certainly part of the decision making process that I make with regards to that.
Okay, that's good. Thank you. I'll note that.
Okay. Okay.
Hey, Valerie, this, mm-hmm. we're not going to be able to do this here, but I know that there's a lot of people on this particular call that are probably wanting to speak up and actually share some of their recommendations. Have you ever been to a car wash? You go to a car wash and they got the basic package, they got the silver package, and they got the platinum package, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And everybody wants the platinum package, but they don't want to pay the price, right? So you give them a menu of options. What you guys are doing right now, and a lot of people do, is they come in with the one package. This is all we got. And it's, 48 cents on the dollar. It's all cash and closed in 7 days. But sometimes the seller may take that. But sometimes the seller needs to see some other options, right, and work through the emotional process. And you guys are in a hot market. You're in Sacramento. You got crazy amounts of competition. And you guys look like probably everybody else. So you may actually have to adjust a little bit over time to come up with your basic, your silver, and your platinum. But your platinum is kind of the realtor, right? But when a realtor takes the listing, then there's a lot of work for the seller. They got to have open houses. They got to get the house vacant. They got to get it all cleaned up, right? It's got to be presentable. And they may get a higher price, and they're going to have a lot of work and a lot of headaches, right? There may be an owner financing deal, because a lot of these deals are probably free and clear, or maybe free and clear. So there may be an opportunity to go in and say, look, you know, I can give you my cash offer at $48,000, but I can get you closer to your price of $80,000 if you'd be flexible on terms, right? So instead of you guys having to come in with cash and come up with your own money, you might get the seller to actually carry back the entire amount of paper at zero interest. Right, so coming up and not just being the one-trick pony and working on sort of different types of offers to meet the demand of the seller, you guys can get a little bit closer. And I will tell you, many times I've done deals where I put properties under contract where the owner is financing the deal, right? 10-year notes, you know, $1,000 a month, ultimately at zero interest. I'd love to do those deals all day long, right? And then they get the money they want. They get the $80,000, but they gotta wait for the money for a period of time. And many times I've gotten those deals under contract, and then at the 11th hour, the seller decides just to take the cash. But I wouldn't have gotten them to take the cash from the onset. They really had to think about it. They had to go through that process of what they're gonna do with the money, and do they really need the money today or not, right? So just something to think about. You guys may need to adjust that a little bit. And frankly, a lot of us around the country in the hot markets are having to do that. Mm-hmm. If we see more competition where our all cash offer is being beat by people that can actually do an owner finance type of deal at a higher price. So I know it's a hot topic. It's something we're going to talk in Dallas about, because a lot of people don't really know how to do the owner financing model, and how to make that offer, and how to structure it, and how to sell it to the seller. So I know that we need to direct people on kind of that path. So hopefully you got
great. Thank you, guys.
Awesome. All right. I know we're way beyond the hour, 1:30, 30 minutes over. So, Chris, any final words before we depart?
No final words. I am. Oh, the final words are the Cricket Flour Protein Bar does leave a little aftertaste after I ate it. So I'm not thinking I'm going to order that one again.
Yeah, and don't send me the link. Because
okay.
I'm not eating cricket. So I don't actually eat anything that has insects in it.
All right.
Because those are the commands. All right.
Yes.
All right, everybody.
All
have
right.
a great week. We will not have a call next Tuesday, but we will send an announcement about that.
Okay.
All right. Have a great week.